As people are coming back into the auditorium, I wanted to mention that I have a sign-up sheet up here. If anyone would like to get weekly email updates from Apologetics Press, when we put out new articles each Monday, we send out an email to a subscriber list of about 6,000 people. If you would like to put your name and email address on here, we don't sell your email address. We don't send your email address around to other organizations or corporations. So you should not receive any junk mail from anyone else because of this. But anyway, if you would like to receive a weekly email update, it should be every Monday morning, sometimes Monday afternoon, about the new articles that we put on our website every week. Again, feel free to put your name and address up here, and we'll hopefully start that. We can get that to our computer guy back at Apologetics Press and get that going very soon. I do want to mention one more time that we do have some materials in the back from Apologetics Press, books that are being sold. And so if you would like to look at some of those, feel free to do so. The book, The Dinosaur Delusion, has just about everything and more of the information that we covered last session and that we are covering in this hour. It's got a lot of evidence. It's got a lot of documentation, many, many references. So I think it is very helpful in faith building. And also, just remember our website, www.apologeticspress.org or .com.net. Any of those should get you there. It's full of thousands of articles and things you can download for free. There is a web store on there if you would like to purchase books and so forth. You can do that. But we try to make as much material as possible for free electronically on our website. And we're very thankful that the Lord uses our website to get good information out to various peoples around the world. And He has blessed our lives very much, and He has really helped in our work at Apologetics Press. So we're very thankful for that. I'm thankful again for your kind attention. Thankful to the elders of this congregation and those in leadership positions who have something to do with me coming here, inviting me. Thoroughly enjoyed getting to meet all of you. Look forward to this lecture now, and also tomorrow. I hope you'll be back for the three periods, including the Bible class period in the morning and the two worship periods tomorrow. Those lectures will not be, most likely, be as long as these because of the two of those being done during the worship periods, but I think they will be very beneficial as well. You know, in this subject, or in the topic of did humans ever live with dinosaurs, there are some who react, well, okay, Eric, I see all those things that you're saying, and I see that information, I see the evidence that you were putting forth, but some people simply have a very, very difficult time thinking that humans could have lived with dinosaurs. I mean, think about it. How could humans have lived with these creatures? How could humans have lived with dinosaurs that had tails that were 20, 30, and even 40 feet long that weighed thousands of pounds? How could humans have lived with dinosaurs like Velociraptor and Deinonychus that had sickle-like claws that could cut us open and teeth very sharp that they could take a bite out of us? How is it that humans could have lived with Allosaurus and Tyrannosaurus Rex and Argentinosaurus that estimates are grew to be 110 tons? I mean, if Argentinosaurus had stomped on us, we would have died, no doubt, or at best been, you know, had all sorts of health problems because of that. And so many people have stated that it's ridiculous to think that just on this surface, it's just ridiculous to think, to even propose that humans living together with dinosaurs sometime in the past or the distant past, that is ridiculous. In fact, there's one gentleman, in fact, he's a brother in Christ, who said some years ago, it's ludicrous to suggest that man cohabited with the dinosaurs in an alley-oop kind of world. Now, I would suggest that this man is very misinformed and has some problems to deal with in regard to Scripture, and we'll talk about that more, Lord willing, tomorrow. But some people just feel it's ludicrous to think that man could have lived with these creatures. This same gentleman said, man could not have lived in a world full of dinosaurs. Could not have happened. And so really, before you even start talking about some of the physical evidence that we discussed last hour about the coexistence of dinosaurs and humans, or some of the historical or biblical evidence that we're going to get into here in just a few moments. At the very beginning, people just, wait a second, this just sounds ludicrous to me. It sounds ridiculous. People, allegedly, could not have lived in a world full of dinosaurs. Well, I don't know what your mindset is or what your reaction is to statements like that, but I like to think that I'm careful about making statements that simply cannot be proven like this, like humans could not have lived in a world full of dinosaurs. I believe that so many people have really been boxed in by the theory of evolution that sometimes they're not thinking really outside of the evolutionary box. And what I mean is, just consider for a few minutes some of the amazing animals that we live with today. I mean, for someone to say, hey, we couldn't live with dinosaurs, and then not recognize that, wait just a minute, we live with the biggest lizard on earth today called the Komodo dragon. Now, granted, it's not as big as some of the great dinosaurs from the past, but this thing's a beast. You could say he's a monster. He can grow to be about 10 feet long from head to tail, weigh 200 to 300 pounds, run as fast as a fast dog, and for those of you who like to eat, a Komodo dragon can eat up to 80% of its body weight in one meal. I mean, if you weigh 100 pounds, and obviously I don't, and you decide to go to McDonald's to get a quarter pounder, you know, one or two quarter pounders, I'm pretty good. You know, I don't think I've ever had 3 quarter pounders in one meal, okay? Komodo dragon that weighs 100 pounds could eat how many? 80 times 4, 320 quarter pounders in one meal. I mean, amazing creature. Not only that, Komodo dragon, one of the most unbelievable things about it is he's got bacteria that live in its mouth that is deadly when it bites another animal, but it's not deadly living inside of its own mouth. So when this creature bites an animal, that animal becomes infected with that bacteria, eventually, normally dies, and even before it dies, becomes disabled so that the Komodo dragon is able to feast upon it, even while it might be still living. Amazing animal. Guess what? I may not live next door to one, but we live on this planet with the Komodo dragon. You know, one of the fiercest animals that has been considered one of the fiercest animals in the world for years has been the lion. You know, the lion has a roar that is so loud and intimidating that they say on a clear, silent night that you can hear a lion roaring 5 miles away. Lions are beasts. And from what I understand, tigers can even grow to be bigger than lions. I mean, lions, if there was one loose in this room tonight, guess what we'd be doing? We'd be running like crazy to get away from that thing. I'd mentioned the moose a few minutes ago or last hour that I ran from. Let me tell you, I think I'd run twice as fast from a lion or a tiger. But you know, it's amazing that humans, even though we live with these animals that have sharp claws and big long teeth and they were just strong, ferocious creatures, that humans have lived with these animals for thousands of years. Humans have flourished on this planet living with these creatures. And not only that, humans have trained these creatures to do all sorts of things. So here are animals that are considered ferocious, that are considered, you know, untamable in a sense. But wait a minute, people have tamed them. People have tamed them and they have them in circuses and they entertain millions of people around the world each year. The largest land animal in the world today, the African imperial elephant, can grow to weigh about 22,000 pounds. If there was an elephant on the loose in our midst and it knocked us with his 200 or 300 pound trunk or stepped on us with one of his big feet and pressed down all of that 22,000 pounds on us, there's no doubt about it that we wouldn't live to see the next day. Amazing creatures. And yet, you know what? We have lived with these creatures for thousands of years. Again, why am I mentioning all this? Simply to say this. To make the statement, or to think that, well, it's far out to think that humans could have lived with dinosaurs because dinosaurs were ferocious. They were big. They were large. They had big, you know, banana-sized teeth like T-Rex. Their heads were 5 feet long like T-Rex. They weighed many, many tons. Their tails were too big. Their teeth were too sharp. Their claws were too long. Well, wait a minute. We live on this earth with Komodo dragons. We live on this earth with lions and tigers. We live on this earth with elephants that for thousands of years had been not just around us, but we have trained them and tamed them to do all sorts of things. Do you know that the general of the Carthaginian army, Hannibal, around the year 22 let's see, it would have been about, would that be in 200 B.C., if I'm not mistaken? 200 or 300 B.C., that he took trained African elephants across the Mediterranean into Italy to battle the Romans. Trained African elephants 2,200 years ago or so. And you know what? We're still training elephants today. Elephants have been trained to do all sorts of things, from riding oversized tricycles to playing soccer to painting and even dunking a basketball. Again, let's be careful not to be pinned into thinking, well, humans could not have lived with these creatures because we're too dumb, because we're too ignorant, because we're too small, because we're too scrawny. Folks, there are animals all over this world that we still live with, even though they're amazing, ferocious animals like the orcas that swim out, the killer whales that swim in the open oceans. I mean, these can be ferocious creatures. They're called killer whales. I was talking to a friend of mine who lives up in Alaska a few months ago, and he said, Eric, I was out fishing the other day, saw a killer whale come up out of the water with a half of a salmon hanging out of his mouth. I mean, this was some kind of sight. These creatures, well, they can be deadly. And yet, do you know what people have done with killer whales? You can go down to SeaWorld and you can see how people have tamed killer whales to do some amazing tricks. Jump over a particular line, jump up and hit a ball, take humans with them on rides. We went down to SeaWorld in San Antonio a few years ago. You know, just to sit there and watch killer whales carrying people around is simply astounding, amazing. And then to hear people say, well, humans are too dumb, too scrawny, not intellectual enough or not strong enough or whatever to have lived with dinosaurs a long time ago, I don't buy. You know, the blue whale is the largest animal that we have ever known that has ever existed. They can grow to be 110 feet long, and there are dinosaurs that have grown longer than this, we know from the fossil record, some. Only one, I guess, that I know of, Argentinosaurus. And yet, this creature has weighed, they have discovered that one or more of them have weighed upwards to 400,000 pounds, about 200 tons, which is about twice as much as any other dinosaur, of any dinosaur that has ever been found and weights estimated in the fossil record. These creatures are so big that their tongue weighs 6,000 pounds, and I've been told you could fit about 40 people on top of it. Their heart's the size of a Volkswagen Beetle, and that a small child, I understand, could crawl through the aorta of the heart of a blue whale. Now, why do I bring that up? Amazing creatures that people have even gotten in the water with and swam up next to. Don't tell me, okay? Don't tell me and think it's reasonable to say humans could not have lived with dinosaurs if that's all you're going to say. Because the idea that dinosaurs were too big, they were too strong, they were too scary, they were too fast, they were too ferocious. Well, how do we know all that just from their bones, from the fossil record? And even if they were ferocious, killer whales are ferocious, lions are ferocious, Komodo dragons are ferocious, but humans still live with all of these animals. James said, for every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. Lions and tigers and bears, even snakes and larger mammals that live out in the ocean. Yes, humans have tamed various creatures of all kinds. Why is that the case? How is that the case? Because humans, God made humans different than animals. We learn about that in the first chapter of Genesis, the first chapter of the Bible. Why is it that humans could have lived with dinosaurs and humans could tame all these creatures and live with all these? Well, because God made us in His image, and part of that image included us being able to have God making us different than animals and us being able to have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, over the cattle. God told them to fill the earth, that is Adam and Eve, subdue it and have dominion over the animals. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every living thing that moves on the earth. You know, the idea that we are equal to animals on this earth is not a scriptural, biblical, Christian idea. Not at all. The Bible tells us that we are made different from animals. The Bible tells us that we are made in the image of God. And this is why we can live on this earth with all sorts of animals and that we can even tame them. The psalmist said, "You have put all things under His feet." You see, you have made who? Man, to have dominion over all your works. That doesn't mean that we need to have an arrogant attitude about our responsibility in this world. Our life as stewards of God's creation. That doesn't mean that we need to take advantage of His creation, that we need to strip His creation of every resource and do this and do that all the time. But the creation is here not for us to serve the creation, but the creation to be, in a sense, subdued and dominated. Again, not in a negative way, in a positive way, by God's image bearers, which are, who is? Well, it's humanity. It's humans. It's those who were created in the image of God. So point number one regarding reason, regarding common sense, it is not ludicrous, as one person suggested, to think that humans could have lived with these creatures, because we live with a lot of amazing creatures. Second, what does the Bible have to say about this subject? We could have started off this two-part lecture on this subject. But I chose to kind of wait till the kind of the middle of this two-part, or in the second lecture here, to talk about this, because I think it also leads to the next discussion that we'll get into here in just a few moments. What does the Bible have to say about dinosaurs? Well, if you open up your Bibles, you're not going to find the word dinosaur in there. I had a young man come to my office a few years ago, and he was very disturbed. He said, "Eric, I'm bothered by something." And I said, "What is that?" He said, "I'm bothered." This was a college student who lives there in Montgomery. He said, "I'm bothered by the fact that you can't read about dinosaurs in the Bible. You cannot read the word dinosaur in the Bible, and that just bothers me. Then how could dinosaurs, you know, how could God have created them?" And that seemed to be his question. And he had other questions besides that. Well, it's true. I've never had a Bible that used the term dinosaur, where people have translated the Greek and the Hebrew and the Aramaic and used the term dinosaur. What would the reasons be behind that? Well, number one, recognize that the English term dinosaur, as we noted in a lecture or two ago, was not created until the 1840s, was not coined, was not invented. So you can't have a word in a book that was around hundreds and hundreds of years before that. I mean, the Old Testament, we believe, written beginning around 1500 B.C., and then you have the New Testament being written in the first century, and then you have the Scriptures being translated into English not until around the 16th century, okay, the 1500s. And then we have the King James Version that comes along around 1611. None of those versions, those early versions, none of them have the term dinosaur. Why? Well, it wouldn't be in there, first of all, because the word wasn't even around then. You couldn't expect the word to be there when the word didn't exist, when the translation of the Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic was made. Well, second of all, just because the Bible doesn't mention an animal doesn't mean, number one, that animal didn't exist. It doesn't mean that humans couldn't have lived with this animal. It doesn't mean that the creature is not talked about in a general, broad way. There are a lot of animals not mentioned in the Bible. I don't think you're ever going to read about aardvarks in the Bible. I don't think you ever read about anteaters in the Bible. I don't even know that you read about the house cat in the Bible. And I think they've had house cats for a long time. And you know what? I'm fine with them not mentioning house cats. I'm not a big cat lover. I'm sorry for those of you men and women who love cats. I'm a dog guy, but I don't mind cats. My neighbor's got a nice one. There are a lot of animals you don't read about in Scripture. Does that mean what? It doesn't mean they didn't exist. It doesn't mean that humans didn't live with them. The animal's simply not mentioned. The Bible is not a book of taxonomy. It's not a book to tell us, or a zoology book to tell us about every single animal that has ever existed, or every single thing that every single animal ever did. There are a lot of things that the Bible does not tell us. But it does tell us, generally speaking, that on day six of creation, that God made land animals, Genesis chapter 1, verses 24 and 25, and that by definition, dinosaurs are land animals. I believe that saber-toothed tigers are land animals, that woolly mammoths are land animals, that bears and lions are land animals. And by definition, if they're land animals, then they were created on day six of creation. Genesis chapter 1 also tells us that God made humans on day six of creation. He didn't make those humans. This is just a picture of some of my family members here. But God made Adam and Eve on day six of creation. So, according to Genesis chapter 1, you would have then, generally speaking, dinosaurs listed with all of the other, or have been created with all of the other animals that were there. Furthermore, there's a passage in Exodus chapter 20, which is a good comment or commentary on the creation in the Ten Commandments that are given there in Exodus chapter 20, where Moses wrote, "For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them." In 6 days, The Bible says, the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. Lord willing, tomorrow we'll be discussing this passage a little bit in a little bit more detail in the AM worship period tomorrow. Now, if God made everything in 6 days, then what does the Bible have to say about dinosaurs and humans? Well, I'm not ashamed to say that I fully believe that the Bible says that God made land animals and humans on day 6. God made the birds of the air and the fish of the sea on day 5. God made the sun, moon, and stars on day 4. God made the land vegetation, land to appear on day 3. He made the firmament on day 2. He made the heavens, the earth. In the beginning, God made the heavens and the earth on day 1 along with light. Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. So I'm not ashamed of what Scripture has to say in regard to all this, and I believe that generally speaking, the Bible tells us in the book of Genesis and the book of Exodus that dinosaurs and humans once lived together. Furthermore, there are some animals that the Bible talks about that sound very much like large creatures that look like, sounded like dinosaurs or dinosaur-like creatures. In the book of Job, chapter 40, there's a lot of things that people know about the book of Job, but most of that revolves around the first two chapters of Job and the last chapter of Job. Job lost his servants, he lost his family, he lost his wealth, and then at the end of the book you see where he's blessed with 10 more children. He's twice as wealthy as he used to be. But there are a lot of chapters in between there where there are speeches by Job and his friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. They were good friends in that they stayed with him for several days, comforting him or attempting to before they opened up their mouths and kind of got themselves in trouble like we all do and not really comforted him very much. But later in the book, you have Job wanting a session with God. He wants to meet with God. He wants to know why, you know, all these things are happening to him. He doesn't understand it. Well, God doesn't come and give him a direct answer. God doesn't say, well, this is why. God lets Job know that he is omnipotent, that he is omniscient, that he is the creator, that he is sovereign over his creation, and that many things Job simply does not understand. In Job chapters 38, 39, 40, and 41, God speaks to Job about this, and he talks about a lot of animals. In end of chapter 38, all of chapter 39, and in chapter 40, he begins talking about an animal that is called behemoth. It's from the Hebrew word behemoth. It is transliterated behemoth because really people don't know for sure what this animal is. At least Bible translators just normally transliterate it. Look now at behemoth, which I made along with you. A lot of Bible footnotes and comments and a lot of commentaries say that the behemoth is supposed to be either the hippopotamus or the elephant. But still, most Bible translators simply put behemoth, transliterated the word, and didn't put hippo or elephant in the text. But a lot of people think it's the hippo or the elephant. But you know, when you look at this creature that God says he made along with Job, that is, they're both real creatures, that Job is a real person, behemoth was a real animal. He describes this creature as eating grass like an ox. Again, this is God's description here. See now, his strength is in his hips and his power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. Okay, he sways his tail. He moves his tail like a cedar. I don't know if you've ever seen the tail of a hippo or the tail of an elephant, but it's not characterized as something that sways like a cedar. When the Bible talks about the cedar, many times the Bible writers were comparing things that are supposed to be large to cedars because the cedars were large, they were big. Notice they grow like a cedar. A cedar in Lebanon, what? It had high stature, whose height was like the height of the cedars. I know you out here in California, Oregon know about tall trees, don't you? Well, this is many times when the Bible writers use this term, it's something that's big and something that's large. And when you talk about an animal that has a tail that sways like a cedar, and God is impressing this upon the mind of Job for a reason, again, I believe to show God's omnipotence, to show his omniscience, to show his sovereignty, it's just hard for me to believe that this is supposed to be the description found in Job chapter 40. Or that it's the tail of the hippo. I mean, why? I'm baffled to think that some people believe this is the hippo or the elephant, and partly because what would be the point of God bringing up, here is an amazing animal that Job is to acknowledge and fear in a sense and understand that God is the creator of this amazing animal, and he's got a tail like a cedar and it's really just wagging behind like a 6 to 8 inch stubby appendage. just doesn't make sense to me. I believe that the animal here had a tail like a cedar, and although I can't say 100% sure, it sounds much more like one of the long-necked, long-tailed creatures that we know once lived on this earth. Behemoth, his bones are like beams of bronze. His ribs like bars of iron. Again, this is poetic language. Psalms, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, those are books of poetry. But you can't just pass off all this as, well, that's just, you know, figurative, non-literal, exaggerated language. There is a real creature talked about here. No, his bones are not iron. His bones are not bronze, but they are like that. What's the point? The bones of this creature are just amazing. He is the first of the ways of God. Only he who made him can bring near his sword. I mean, this guy is not taken down easily. Is this the hippo? Or do you think it might be an animal that's about 15 and a half times the size of the hippo? Argentinosaurus or some other long-necked, long-tailed dinosaur that could weigh 40 or 50 or 60, 70 tons, or as some scientists estimate, Argentinosaurus could grow to be 110 tons. It seems to me that a long-necked, long-tailed dinosaur fits much better the description of the animal that God is describing to Job in Job chapter 40. Furthermore, we know that the ancient Egyptians used to go out and they hunted the hippopotami or hippopotamuses, and that they killed many of them. Now, hippos can be ferocious animals. I wouldn't want to get near one, at least not without a few guns or something near me. But they were nothing compared to some of the long-tailed, large dinosaurs. And I fully believe that the description in Job chapter 40 is not of a hippopotamus or of an elephant, but of some other creature that I believe fits very well with the description of what we're told dinosaurs once looked like. And notice the description of the animal in Job chapter 41, Leviathan. And this is another amazing creature. Again, this is not some man describing these things. This is God speaking to Job. And I'm not trying to diminish the inspired writers at all. There was an inspired writer who wrote this down, but he wrote this as God was speaking it to Job. I mean, that's what the context of Job is here. God is speaking to Job about Leviathan. Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? There are several rhetorical questions that are asked here. What is Leviathan? Again, there are many people who say Leviathan is supposed to be a crocodile. Okay, and crocodiles can be ferocious creatures. Now, the crocodile hunter maybe handle them a lot differently than what I might. There are some people today who can handle crocodiles in a very different way than I could. Some people have toyed with them like we might toy with our dogs in the backyard, but supposedly this is the crocodile, at least some people say it is. What about all these rhetorical questions? Can you put a reed through his nose? Can you, or pierce his jaw with a hook? Well, the answer to this is supposed to be no, you can't. Though the sword reaches him, it cannot avail, nor does spear, dart, or javelin. Darts are regarded as straw and bronze as rotten wood. Okay, the creature that God is describing as Job here is some amazing creature. And it's hard for me to believe that he's describing an alligator or a crocodile here. People have been killing these animals for years. The ancient Egyptians used to kill them, and then some of them would mummify them. This is a picture from a Current Science Weekly kids reader that they have in school of a stack of mummified crocodiles. Well, is this the creature that God is describing to Job here? I don't believe that at all. As you continue to read the description, God says his undersides are like sharp potsherds. He spreads pointed marks in the mire. Like sharp pieces of broken pottery, his undersides are like, as he crawls along the ground, as he comes up out of the water, it's some kind of water-living animal, he leaves jagged pointed marks in the mud. Well, from what I understand, I have not gotten too close to alligators and crocodiles, but the undersides of those animals are not like sharp pieces of broken pottery. God went on to say, on earth there is nothing like him which is made without fear. He beholds every high thing. Exactly what that means, I don't know, but it sure doesn't sound like an alligator or a crocodile that keeps his head close to the ground. There is nothing like him which is made without fear. I suppose that the most compelling description of this creature is found in the verses that I have on the screen behind me where God described this creature as having sneezings flash forth light. That is, his sneezings flash forth light. And his eyes are like eyelids of the morning. Out of his mouth go burning rushes. Sparks of fire shoot out. Smoke goes out of his nostrils. That's from a boiling pot and burning rushes. His breath kindles coals, and a flame of fire goes out of his mouth. Folks, this is not written in a fairy tale book. Now, if you're here and not a Christian, you don't believe that the Bible is the inspired word of God, you might believe it's a fairy tale book. But the Bible is a very historical book, full of historical things, historical people, historical places, and real animals and real people. And God here is not talking about some mythical creature. That if it was a mythical creature that God was describing to Job as he was trying to let Job understand how great he is, and how Job is another one of his creatures who doesn't have all the answers in this lifetime. You would think Job's response would be, if this was a mythical creature, well, God, what's your point? This is just a made-up animal. Well, no, it's not a made-up animal. This is God speaking to Job, and he says, folks, his sneezings flash forth light. He says, out of his mouth go burning lights, sparks of fire shoot out, smoke goes out of his nostrils, that's from a boiling pot and burning rushes, his breath kindles coals, and a flame of fire goes out of his mouth. Oh, again, I understand this is poetic language. I understand you have some exaggeration in poetic language like this, and you have all sorts of other interesting descriptions and metaphors and similes, but what's the point he's making? Something spews out of the mouth and nostrils of this creature that, at the very least, looks like, resembles fire and smoke, and most likely is fire and smoke. But wait just a minute. No dinosaur ever breathed fire or smoke. At least that's what Dr. Hugh Ross said in his book, The Genesis Question. No dinosaur ever breathed fire. This is another one of those statements, like I mentioned a little bit ago. I'm always leery of people who say, this never happened. And then, you know, my question is, well, how do they know that? How do they know? How does Hugh Ross know that no dinosaur ever breathed fire or smoke? Does that, you know, you might think on the surface, well, you know, it makes sense. I just don't see how a creature could ever do something like that. Well, my response is twofold. And then I have some other slides I'm going to show you in light of this. Number one, if you are an atheist or an evolutionist, and you believe that we're here via evolution, time and chance and random processes, then you believe in some things you've never seen. You believe that something came from nothing. You believe that life came from non-life. Never seen that happen before. You believe that various animals changed in from amphibians to reptiles and to mammals, and you've never... So I don't understand how atheists or evolutionists would have a problem with this, because they believe in a lot of things that are much more, for lack of a better term, problematic, we might say, than this, even though this is not problematic. Are much more troubling, we might say. And if you're a creationist, you're a Christian, I sure wouldn't think we would have a problem thinking that there could be animals that God created who could do something like this. I mean, think about all of the other animals that God created. God made the electric eel. Okay, have you thought about what the electric eel does recently? Have you thought about, here's an eel that can shock you, that can send you to the hospital by taking volts of electricity from his body into your body? This is an amazing creature that God created. Doesn't shock itself, but can shock the daylights out of you and send you to the hospital. Have you thought recently about how God made a bug called the lightning bug or firefly that can just light up? I mean, don't tell me that no dinosaur ever breathed fire or smoke. Now think about this. Dr. Hugh Ross believes that, or says that, even though he believes that humans never saw dinosaurs and that dinosaurs are separated in time from humans by 60 plus million years. So he's never seen a dinosaur. He says no human ever saw a dinosaur, but he is convinced that no dinosaur ever breathed fire or smoke. On what basis does he make such a statement? I believe in the electric eel. I believe that fireflies are real. I've seen them in my backyard. I've caught them Don't tell anybody, but me and my kids sometimes pull the tail end off of those things and get to see the bioluminescent light. Amazing little creatures that take luciferin and luciferous in its body, combine it with oxygen and light up. There's a creature that does that today. Amazing creature. We need to open our eyes, smell the roses, consider some of the amazing animals like the bombardier beetle that has a storage chamber in its body that holds hydroquinones and hydrogen peroxide and pumps it into another area of its body where it combines it with enzymes that then eventually shoots out its back end at 212 degrees Fahrenheit and does all of that without exploding its body up and without killing itself. I sometimes ask people, can you imagine the evolution of the bombardier beetle? I mean, think about that. A bombardier beetle that has never done that before, and the first bombardier beetle that ever does it. You've never blown anything out of your back end that's 212 degrees Fahrenheit. And then you blow something out your back end that's 212 degrees Fahrenheit. How did the first bombardier beetle evolve? You would think it would have blown itself up. I believe this is evidence for creation, and I believe that it is good evidence that we have creatures that do amazing things still today. And whether you are a creationist or an evolutionist, you should have no problem believing that there could have been some creatures in the past that could spew something out of its mouth and nose that, again, at least resembled fire and smoke, if not were exactly that. In our children's book on dinosaurs called Dinosaurs Unleashed, and there may be one or more copies in the back on this of this book, we commissioned the Canadian artist Louis Lavoie to illustrate various things for us in the book, including the cover. And regarding Leviathan, you know, we don't know for sure what Leviathan looked like, but we just asked Mr. Lavoie to read Job 41 over and over and over again and just try to illustrate as best he could what he reads in that chapter. And the way he illustrated it was this way. Is this exactly what Leviathan looks like? Probably not. But I know that the Leviathan you read about in Job chapter 41 was an amazing, amazing creature that could do some amazing things and that we, I think, could safely say was a terrifying animal. You know, isn't it interesting that there are some stories in history that sound a lot like Leviathan that you read about in Job chapter 41? All these creatures weren't called dinosaurs. They were called what? Well, they were called dragons. The word dinosaur wasn't coined until 1842. But wait a minute, Eric. I thought dragons were all fairy tale creatures. I mean, that creature that God is describing there in Job, you know, we've heard stories like that, and that's just not quite right. Well, the ancients used the word dragon from the Greek drakon to refer to any large serpent or reptile, whether real or mythological, aquatic, aerial, or terrestrial. That is, that flew in the air, that walked on the land, or that swam in the seas. Have some dragon legends been embellished over time? Certainly. Certainly they have. Don't we embellish stories a lot? Maybe not always intentionally. Have you been fishing before, guys, and come home and told your wife that I caught a fish that big, and maybe it was more like that big? Have you ever tipped the scales and weighed a certain amount and maybe come home and say, well, I weigh around this much right here? You know, maybe trying to make the facts, massage them a little bit. And I'm not saying that's right, okay? Please understand that. I'm just saying there are a lot of things that are right, that are true, and that are true stories that we may embellish at times. And there's no doubt that people have embellished stories through the centuries of dragons. However, such exaggerations do not negate the overriding truth that fearfully great lizards, that's the definition of a dinosaur, fearfully great, from two Greek words, dinos and saurus, meaning fearfully great or terribly great lizards. The overriding truth that fearfully great lizards of many different shapes and sizes once lived with humans. Now please bear with me here for the next 5 or 10 minutes. If humans ever saw these creatures, what would those humans have left behind? I believe, number one, they would have left behind images of some kind, pictures, paintings, carvings for us, which, as we showed in the last lecture, I believe that they have. And number two, just as I could tell you the story about me being chased by a mama moose up in Alaska a few years ago, and knowing that that was real, knowing that happened, and I've told that story before. Well, just as I have told stories about encounters with animals, we were just in West Tennessee at polishing the pulpit a few weeks ago, and we saw some two baby black bear crossing the road there outside of Gatlinburg, and the mama bear not far away, and we certainly stayed in our cars. You know, we can talk about the things that we see as well as draw them or take pictures of them. Isn't it interesting, ironic, if you don't really believe that humans and dinosaurs ever lived together, that humans not only drew pictures and carved pictures of these creatures that are all over the world, but they also, humans all around the world, from basically the beginning of time, they've talked about large reptilian creatures. If humans ever lived with these creatures, what would they have done? I believe they would have drawn pictures of them, and I believe that they would have talked about them. Dragon legends are ubiquitous. That is, they are from all over the world. Notice these quotations from evolutionists, like Carl Sagan, who said, "The implacable mutual hostility between man and dragon is not a Western anomaly. It is a worldwide phenomenon." This evolutionist says, stories about people interacting with dragons, that's a worldwide thing. Notice again, these quotations are from evolutionists, not creationists. Kurthan, an adamant, militant evolutionist, just recently, I guess in the last couple of years, said, "Dragons are found in myths and legends of cultures all around the world." Another comment by evolutionists. Daniel Cohen, in 1975, said, "People all over the world have believed in dragons." Okay, again, these aren't creationists saying this. These are evolutionists saying, yeah, you know what? These stories are all around the world. And not only that, we'll notice this other quotation from the Animal Planet's DVD about dragons. This was the very beginning of the film. The very beginning, and I forgot who was narrating this. He's got a great voice. He used to play on Star Trek, I believe. I think, was he Captain? What's his name? I can't remember. Anyway, maybe you'll have to rent the DVD sometime. But this is how the DVD opens. "There is one creature," he said it something like this, "there is one creature with remarkable, creature remembered in the legends of almost every human culture that's ever existed. Anyway, a creature depicted with remarkable similarity by the Chinese, the Aztecs, even the Inuit, who live in a frozen land where no reptiles are found. Even they have stories of this animal, the dragon. Cultures from different continents, people who had no contact with one another, yet all of them have stories describing the same, what they call, mythical animal." My question is, why are there stories from people from cultures all around the world of the same creature? Because they never existed? Because humans never saw them? Not only are these stories found in cultures all over the world, but they're found in cultures all over the world that go back thousands of years. "The dragon-slaying theme," said Samuel Kramer in his book History Begins at Sumer, "the dragon-slaying theme was an important motif in the Sumerian mythology of the 3rd millennium B.C. That's 4 to 5,000 years ago. In the DVD from Animal Planet they put out on dragons, they said, "This is the animal about which humankind has throughout our history been most compelled by." Science Digest article 1981, Evolutionary Magazine again says, "Dragon legends have been with humanity since the dawn of recorded history." If humans ever saw these creatures, what would be left behind? What would they have left behind for us? I believe, number one, they would have left behind some kind of images. Just like when we go to neat places and we see cool things, we might take pictures of them. They carved and drew some amazing things, and I didn't even get to all of them in my last lecture. And I believe they would have talked about them, and they have these stories that have been passed down to us all over the world long before we began learning about dinosaurs from the fossil record, and they share some very similar characteristics. That is, animals with scaly, hard, elongated bodies, long serpentine necks, enormous tails and stout legs, horned, knobby, and crested heads. They had fearsome teeth, claws, and spikes, some with and without bat-like wings, some with two legs, some with four legs. Stories of these animals all over the world, say evolutionists and creationists, but I think to prove my point, it's more convincing to use statements from evolutionists, that go back to the beginning of time. Now, my question is, why? Why do we have all those stories in existence? Why do they exist? I'll get to that in just a moment. The New Encyclopedia Britannica, 1997, referred, get to this, to dinosaurs as gigantic, prehistoric, dragon-like reptiles. So dinosaurs, this encyclopedia says, are dragon-like. Yet the encyclopedia was careful to say that dragon legends apparently rose without the slightest knowledge on the part of the ancients of these real animals, that is, of dinosaurs. Daniel Cohen said, no creature that ever lived looked more like dragons than dinosaurs. Atheist Carl Sagan, this man was one of the few evolutionists that I have read who have attempted to answer, why are all these dragon legends all around the world from basically the beginning of time? Why is that the case? Carl Sagan kind of attempted to guess at why that's the case. And I want you to read what he speculated about humans and how humans may very well remember dinosaurs. He indicated that the pervasiveness of these stories is probably no accident, that these stories are all around the world. And what's his explanation to it? Well, I'll let you read it. This is in his book, The Dragons of Eden, that he wrote back in 1977. He asked, could there have been man-like creatures who actually encountered Tyrannosaurus rex? Could there have been dinosaurs that escaped the extinctions of the late Cretaceous period? Could the pervasive dreams and common fear of monsters, which children develop shortly after they're able to talk, be evolutionary vestiges of quite adaptive baboon-like responses to dragons and owls? Let me summarize to you what he speculated here, if I understand him correctly. Don't know that he necessarily believed this, but he hinted to it in his book, The Dragons of Eden. He seems to be saying, you know, I wonder if, you know, we've got all these stories of dragons all over the world that go back to the beginning of time. I wonder if some of the dinosaurs lived a little longer than we thought they lived. And maybe some of those dreams that we have and that my kids wake me up in the middle of the night sometimes with, of these ferocious monsters, maybe we have those dreams because some of our ape-like ancestors ran into the dinosaurs millions of years ago and it scared them to death. They eventually died out and humans came along. And then those memories of encounters that our baboon-like ancestors had with the dinosaurs, they were passed down to us, and that's why we have bad dreams? That seems to me to be what he's saying. Why are there these stories all around the world? You know that in the year 2003, there were some gentlemen who discovered a dinosaur in South Dakota. In fact, here is a replica of that dinosaur here that's housed in the Children's Museum in Indianapolis, Indiana. Here is a dinosaur, fossils of a dinosaur that were found in South Dakota just a few years ago. Now, isn't it something that they named this dinosaur Draco Rex, which means the Dragon King? Why would you name a dinosaur Dragon King? Because they believe the dinosaur looked like a dragon? Well, why do we think dinosaurs look like dragons? Because dragons, the stories that have been told around the world for centuries, for millennia, have been told for millennia around the world, and they sound like what? They named a dinosaur Dragon King. They sound like dinosaurs. If humans ever saw these creatures, what would they have done? They would have talked about them, and they would have drawn them. And so I believe we have evidence, physical evidence, as we showed last hour. I believe we have historical evidence that humans once lived with these creatures. One placard in the museum there, the Children's Museum in Indianapolis, Indiana, said next to this, when we saw this creature's head, we weren't sure what kind of dinosaur it was. Its spiky horns, bumps, and long muzzle looked more like a dragon. It's a new type of dinosaur that looks like a dragon. Well, if it looks like a dragon, maybe that's just what dinosaurs were, considering we didn't have the word dinosaur around until the 1840s anyway. I believe there is an unbelievable connection between, and I say unbelievable, of course it's believable, it's an insurmountable objection or problem that some people have to get around if they say that humans never lived with these creatures, because humans have been talking about them for thousands of years. In an article that Kerr Than wrote called Top 10 Beasts and Dragons, How reality made myth. Okay, he's an evolutionist. And again, one of the few times I've heard evolutionists try to give some kind of reason for why we have these stories of creatures that God described to Job in Job chapter 41. Why do we have these stories? Here's an evolutionist who says, well, I'm going to give 10 options as to why we have stories of creatures that are called dragons, that we call dragons. And he gave various explanations. Well, you know, maybe they just saw large lizards running around and they kind of embellished them and made them sound like... His number three choice, I found this quite interesting, his number three choice, let me back up here, was of all the creatures that ever lived, pterosaurs, dinosaur-like flying reptiles here, probably most closely resemble the dragons of European legend. He just admitted, you know what? There aren't any animals alive today or from the past that more closely resemble the dragons of European legend than the flying dinosaur-like creatures that we call pterosaurs, pterodactyl, pteranodon, rhamphorhynchus, and others. Reptilian and featherless, pterosaurs flew on wings of hide that were supported by a single long and bony finger. The smallest pterosaur was the size of a sparrow, while Quetzalcoatlus, named after the Aztec god, get this, had a wingspan of more than 40 feet, making it the largest flying creature ever. Can you imagine seeing a creature flying through the air with a wingspan of 40 feet? I don't know. I wonder how wide this auditorium is from, like, say, here to here. Is it? I wonder if it's... It may be more like 50, I don't know. That's a huge creature, bigger than some small airplanes. You think that some people saw those in the distant past? I fully believe that. A lot of our stories sound like that. Why were they telling those stories? Because they saw the creatures. Did they embellish some of those stories? No doubt they embellished some of them. But you know, when we're reading a story today of some of these dragon legends, and some people say this flying beast was going through the air and had a wingspan of 40 feet, you know what? That's not exaggeration. Because fossils of Quetzalcoatlus have been found, and we have discovered that there were flying reptiles that grew to be that large. Kerthan's number one explanation. He wrote this article. Okay, let me tell you why I believe that we have all these dragon legends around the world that go back to the beginning of time. Why is that the case? Well, here's his number one explanation for it. And I believe this is just one example, one illustration of how silly sometimes some evolutionists are in their explanations of what they believe. The number one explanation for these things we've been talking about tonight, here is what Kerthan said. Number one explanation for dragon legends, centered not around animals, but comets. He said in his article, "To people living in ancient times, a comet streaking through the skies with an icy tail millions of miles long would have closely resembled such a creature. If comets were the inspiration for some dragon legends, it could help explain why dragons are ubiquitous in myths and legends of so many different cultures in all corners of the world." What's the explanation? What's the explanation of dragon legends? I believe this is ridiculous. I'm sorry. Does the one on the left look more like a dragon than the one on the right? The one on the right is called Dragon. Scientists call this creature Dragon King. Why? Because a comet looks more like this than... Why didn't they call it Comet? No, they called it Draco Rex, which means Dragon King. I believe there is powerful evidence that humans and dinosaurs once lived together. And if that evidence is true, then, as Dr. Philip Kitcher said in his book earlier, the evolutionist said, you know what, we would have some serious problems with the theory of evolution if that's the case. I believe that there is evidence all over this world, some of which we probably have never found. Now, in just the closing couple of minutes here, I want to deal with one objection that people ask oftentimes. In fact, there was a gentleman who asked me in between lectures about, well, Eric, you know those pictures that you saw? How do we know the ancients didn't just dig up the fossils like we dig them up and then draw the pictures based upon those fossils? And yes, that's really a very good question that people have. And let me answer that as we close tonight. Number one, unlike dinosaur drawings made in the 21st century, the dinosaur petroglyphs, the carvings, and the paintings or pictographs of and figurines that we pictured last hour are deeply embedded in a historical context of men living with dinosaur-like reptilian creatures often called dragons. You see, some people ask, well, Eric, you know what? We draw pictures of dinosaurs. And if someone comes along 500 years from now and sees a picture that you draw of a dinosaur, that doesn't mean that you lived with a dinosaur. And that's very true. Very true. But you know, if those people who find maybe our pictures 500 years from now, if the earth is still around at that point, then they should do enough thorough investigation to know that in our culture, in our day, all those pictures are drawn in a context of us not living with them. And yet the context of all of the images, the pictographs and the petroglyphs that we showed last hour are embedded in a context that we just talked about of men and women all over the world for thousands of years talked about living with those creatures, not just digging them up in the fossil record and drawing what they look like. Number two, ancient dinosaur artwork based on living dinosaurs agrees with what the Bible has to say. We've talked about that already. Number three, and this is a very important point as well, the locating, excavating, reassembling, and illustrating of dinosaur fossils is an extremely meticulous, painstaking, complex, time-consuming process. And there's some other adjectives we could use to talk about how this is no easy job. We know of no evidence of the ancient people around the world excavating dinosaur fossils, reconstructing their skeletons, and then drawing them accurately and carefully as scientists today in the 21st century attempt to do. Folks, most of the dinosaur bones that are found around the world are not articulated, that we are told. That is, you don't have the neck bone connected to the head bone and the, you know, the backbone connected to the neck bone and the tailbone connected to the backbone. And of course, I know there's more vertebrae and all that and everything. But that's not how most dinosaur bones are found. As we mentioned, I believe, last hour, 45% of all dinosaurs that have been named from one singular fossil specimen. 74% from five specimens or fewer. So it's not like the ancients, you know, they just walked up and they saw this on a rock wall, the creature looked like this. That's fossilologists, paleontologists understand what a time-consuming, intense operation it is to go through looking at various fossils and then meticulously excavating those fossils, which takes a lot of time, and then going somewhere. And by the way, do you think the ancients were really concerned about that? Do you think they were going to spend the thousands of hours it takes to do that when they're worried about where their next meal is going to come from? We don't have any evidence that they did that. And we also know how difficult it is, and even with the painstaking research that is done today, oftentimes scientists still get some of the information wrong. I have more points in our book, The Dinosaur Delusion, on this, but let me go through just a couple of more. Ancient dinosaur artwork repeatedly is found surrounded by real-life, extant, living animals. See, in our day and time, we understand that if someone draws a picture of a dinosaur, that it's not next to, like if you have photographs in your photo albums of your cat and your dog, you're not going to have a picture of you standing next to a real dinosaur, okay? But when you go back in the past, you see these dinosaurs, dragons, being talked about in the same light as other people talked about real animals. And then you see them illustrating these real animals next to the dinosaurs that they were illustrating. It's again in the overall context of humans living with them, seeing them, just like they saw all of the other animals. Five, history does not record ancients excavating and reconstructing dinosaur bones and then accurately drawing how these creatures looked in real life. But you know, there are hints throughout history of the ancients misinterpreting fossils. For example, Dr. Donald D. Young, in his book, I believe it's his book, Thousands, Not Millions, maybe it's in his book on dinosaurs, I can't recall. But he talked about how several hundred years ago, people dug up, and this probably happened multiple times, a dinosaur bone. But you know how they interpreted it? As the femur of a giant human. Okay? We do have indications of them misinterpreting fossils, but not of them excavating and then reassembling fossils and making up illustrations and stories based upon those kinds of things. Another example of them misinterpreting the fossils. My understanding is some people believe that the Cyclops legend came from people finding a fossil of a young elephant where it had a hole where the trunk was supposed to be in the skull. And so some people believe that's where the Cyclops legend came from. And then sixth, and this is a long quotation, so bear with me. Unlike today, when scientists and scientific illustrators often recreate skeletons of dinosaurs based on the fossil record, the ancients depicted the actual bodies of these creatures. If the ancients' knowledge of dinosaurs came from the fossil record, we would expect that they, at least occasionally, would have drawn dinosaur skeletons. Instead, what we find is this. What we find are examples after example of dinosaurs as they would be seen in real life, exactly as one would expect to find find it if the ancients really saw these creatures. Again, I have more information, more answers on this subject in our book called The Dinosaur Delusion. You can also find some of those answers on our website in an article titled something like, Did the Ancients Draw Their Dinosaur-Type Images Based Upon Dinosaur Fossils? I have thoroughly enjoyed being with you all today. I cannot lie when I say that I'm appreciative of your great attention and that I'm tired. And I'm looking forward to a good night of rest tonight, looking forward to a great Lord's Day tomorrow as we come to worship Him and also learn some neat things about His creation and about His wonderful Word and what it has to say about creation. I do believe, although we don't talk about creation, these kinds of things all the time, I do believe that there is a time and a place to discuss these things. You know, the Bible says, the psalmist said, "Declare His glory among the nations, His wonders among all peoples." And I think that we can look at the stars around us. We can look at the amazing design of the human body, the design in the animal kingdom, all of these things that we've been addressing the last few days and that we'll address tomorrow. And I believe that all of that information will lead us to the conclusion, and should lead us to the conclusion, that God is real and that we, as His followers, as Christians, need to be declaring His glory and declaring His wonders among all people all around the world. Thank you for your kind attention. I'm going to hand it over to Nathan for just a moment.